Today's episode of CougarCast is brought to you by The Big Tees. Located at the Provo Town Center Mall, just next to the food court and right down from the movie theater, The Big Tees is the best place to go get all of your custom work done. Custom t-shirts, stickers, posters, wall decals, whatever it is that you need, The Big Tees can do it just to your specific taste. Do you need intramural shirts to signify team unity and also keep you from wearing the disgusting intramural jerseys that they have for you at BYU? The Big Tees is a great solution to making your intramural experience way more enjoyable. Check them out at the Provo Town Center Mall, and if you're not in town, you can check them out online at thebigtees.com, and it's spelled the big and then in the letter T. S.com. So thebigtees.com for all of your custom needs. Did you know that there are kids all around the world who would love to get an education, but they can't because they can't afford a school uniform? That's where Kin Clothing comes in. A company that was started by a student at BYU Hawaii came up with a great idea where if he could sell t-shirts, the money that he could use from that he could put towards getting uniforms for these kids and support their education in third world countries. Go to akinclothing.com today and pick up a t-shirt. They also have hats there. And if you buy one of those things, you can send a kid to school. You buy a t-shirt, that kid gets to go to school. You'll feel fantastic about it and you'll look great because, you know what, the feeling that you'll get while you wear it will just make you feel amazing. Again, that's akinclothing.com, A-K-I-N, akinclothing.com. Go get yourself a t-shirt and send a kid to school. And now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast. Covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com. And follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board. Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast.
It's been a long time. Tosh and I are back, and we're in the same room together. No more Tosh over. Did you hear that booming laugh? No more kind of funny muted
over the phone, over the across phone, the country,
across the country stuff. So, welcome back. Good to see you, pal.
Yeah.
Okay. BYU's football offseason is rolling. 50 days till kickoff.
It'll be here before we know it. I mean, we're here.
Yeah. It's next month? Happens next month.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have, practices will be here before. Like, I think that's just a few weeks away, and then.
Whew. I mean, it's starting to come together. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, Tosh, is I wanted to get into some of the things that you're anticipating the most for this oncoming season and kind of get an idea about maybe what the biggest questions that we have as we're counting down to kickoff here, which is it's a phrase that everybody uses, right? That's that alliteration. But one of the things that I wanted to just go over a little bit was some of the things that you're most kind of interested in seeing that you think, you know, when we take the field in Connecticut, this is what I'll be watching for, and we'll be able to tell relatively quickly whether this is the case or not. And of course, teams get better as the years go on. Nobody is a bigger epitome of that than Bronco. Like, his teams always start slow. They always start 1-2. And then they get better and better and better and better. So obviously they'll improve, but one thing that you'll be looking for just as soon as the season starts, you know, is Do you have anything?
Yeah. From an excitement standpoint, the receivers. That's the – in game one, we've got all these new faces. That's what I'm going to really be watching is what do our receivers do?
That's the exact same thing that I'm on board with. Listen, the one element that's missing from this team is passing. And I think that so much of the focus has gone on to quarterback play and, oh, well, Taysom is going to get better and da-da-da-da-da. But one of the things that's been a problem with this team since 2009, since Pitta left, right? I mean, that team had a lot of options. Pitta and George. Kali was gone by then. But they had – who was receiving for those teams? Oh, no.
That's a good question. I mean, did we have 2009?
McKay Jacobson caught the touchdown against Oklahoma that year.
But was that year? Like –
yes.
I mean, Harvey caught a lot out of the backfield. I'm trying to think. Who was our lead receiver? That's a good – I don't know.
That's something that we'll have to look at. anyway, but one of the things is there hasn't been really dynamic receiving threats outside of Cody Hoffman. Like, besides Cody Hoffman, there hasn't really been a viable, legitimate, scary receiving threat. And so that's one of the things that I think is kind of important to take a look at. And so, you know, I guess I got something that's coming out. If you pay attention on vanquishthefoe.com, it'll be out in the next day or two. I don't know what their release schedule is for it. But one of the things that I wanted to cover was basically it's this, is the most productive returning receiver from the 2013 campaign is Mitch Matthews. And Mitch Matthews, over the season, averaged less than 2 catches a game and 30 yards per game.
So our best returning stats-wise receiver averaged 2 catches per game.
Less than 2.
Somewhat in his defense, and I already threw this argument at you before the show, is that he was injured for several games.
He's out for 5 games or something like that.
And then you threw back at me something that I thought, that's valid.
If you're hurt, you're not helping the team.
Yeah, you're not... like, it's still his average.
It counts against you, doesn't it? Like, you're not on the field.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know that you can't necessarily control whether you get hurt or not, but, like, if Mitch Matthews gets hurt... listen, if judging off his brother, this might be somebody that has injury problems.
Let's hope not, but, I mean, yeah.
So, most productive returning receiver over his career?
That's coming back?
Yeah.
Brett Thompson.
Oppo.
Okay.
Ross Oppo has done the most over his career.
I bet it's pretty
career.
Close with Thompson, because Thompson's had a couple of years where he's had...
You're probably right.
Oppo probably hasn't edged.
Yeah, well, the only guy that has over 1,000 yards that's coming back is okay. Ross Oppo. But he's... I think he's just short of it. I think he's in the 900 spot. But anyway, Ross Oppo, and I joke in the thing that he's getting the McKay Jacobson Award for plateauing as a freshman.
That's harsh, but it's hard to like argue that he didn't plateau as a freshman so far.
It was his best year. If you look at his year-by-year stats, they decrease every single year. So, okay, so one of the things that I wanted to bring up, though, is the 4 transfers. Let's talk about it. Has BYU ever had 4 transfers come in at the same position at the same time?
No. The only thing somewhat remotely close is that we've had, historically, BYU's had a lot of JC transfers that come in at the defensive back
secondary
positions,
yeah.
But never 4. But like, I think we've had years where we've had 2 guys transfer in at the secondary, but 4 guys all at receiver.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy. Like, that's why, to me, watching the receivers in that first game is the obvious answer, is that it's just such an unknown. And not only that, these aren't just guys that, you know, they couldn't play anywhere. These are several of them have tons of hype. And a lot of BYU fans are already talking about them, like, potentially being like all timers.
Yeah. I've heard we've got the best receiving core in the country. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. There's a lot of,
it's a lot of hyperbole there. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, though, of course, Bronco is emphatically speaking over and over again about this addition of Nick Kurtz, Devin Blackman, Jordan Leslie, and Keanu Nelson. Like, he always talks about, well, we got to widen and deepen the opposing defense, right?
Yes, yep.
And that's his, like, catchphrase for whenever he addresses that, that it's critical to widen and deepen the opposing defense with these receivers. Listen, not to burst anyone's bubble, right, but only one of these guys is a legit D1 guy at this point, meaning they've proved it. They've been there. They've done it.
Jordan Leslie.
That's Jordan Leslie. He has 8 career games. Oh, here's one other thing. You want to know why they brought in 4 guys? Okay? Because only Mitch Matthews, he's the only receiver to ever have a game getting 75 yards or more coming back.
Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of the returning guys, there's like Kurt Henderson, who I only remember him having 1 catch last year. There's Colby Pearson, who played a lot last year, but I don't think he had any catches.
Yeah. Nope.
I played a lot. I mean, he had some snaps, a couple snaps each game. But those guys have potential.
You know what's sad? Eric Thornton.
Yeah.
That career's over.
At that Utah, then we went to him 3 straight times in the clutch of the Utah game.
The 2 most important parts of the Utah game, we went to Eric Thornton. He ended up with 1 catch in his BYU career.
I didn't hear anything about him this year. Is he still around?
No, he decided he didn't want to play football anymore.
Huh.
So.
So you weren't saying hyperbole when you said his career's over. His career is over.
His career's over. Okay. So he's
what could have been, like.
just know that and Eric Thornton, until we beat Utah, you are on the hook, my man. You are. The way that I feel about you is the way America feels about Chris Wondolowski right now.
Yeah, I mean,
it's crazy. Nobody else remembers this, but that's where we went. And the 2 most important parts of the game against Utah, we went to Eric.
And it was several plays in a row.
Yes, it's unbelievable. Okay, all right. So anyway, the coaches are staring this in the face. They're like, wow, like, okay, best guy returning over his career is Ross Oppo. We've got an injured Mitch Matthews coming back. Neither of these guys really get you excited. Like, I know that there's some talent.
Kurt Henderson, get you excited.
Kurt Henderson's
like,
okay.
Mitch Matthews can get you excited.
If they got him excited, would they have gone out and brought in 4 transfers?
It's hard to argue. Like, lately I've been calling BYU transfer you because everyone's been transferring in.
Right.
But you – and I've had a lot of discussions with people.
If their coach will allow them, Tosh.
Yeah, well, they're fighting through it either way, right? Everyone wants to play here at the moment. But – and I've had lots of conversations of why are we having this just inordinate amount of transfers in the last 12 months. And one valid point to the receiver's end is that it must be what the coaches are telling these receivers about playing time.
Like, oh, it's got to be. Listen – they convinced 4 guys to come in, 2 of which only got 1 more year of eligibility. They convinced them all to come in, and they all believed, why else would you come, right? And they're coming in believing that they're going to play, and they're going to play over people with experience in the offense. Experience and rhythm with Taysom Hill. And so, you know, that's one of those things that I think is very, you know, it'll be really interesting. And if I was a returning receiver, I'd be wondering, what in the world were they saying about me?
Yeah, no, they're...
When they were out making these visits, what on earth was Guy Holliday saying about me?
Well, I know that some of the returning receivers were unhappy about it, like, were... I mean, but of course, that's just normal. I mean, every day you're hearing about these new, just really hyped up recruits right. That are coming in at your position.
Right.
That are transferring in.
Not only that, then they also selected. They also picked up a couple freshmen, right? That are,
yeah.
You know,
we're not even talking about those.
We're not even talking about those guys. Okay, so let's talk Jordan Leslie for a minute. 8. So BYU has only 1 guy returning of all their returning receivers. Only one of them has ever gotten over 75 yards in a game 1 time. Mitch Matthews did that against Utah State. Jordan Leslie has 8 career Division I games of 100 yards or more.
That's awesome.
He's got 2 over 200 yards. Okay, in his first 3 seasons, he gained 2,015 yards on 125 catches for 15 TDs. For reference, the career outputs of Mitch Matthews, Ross Oppo, Brett Thompson, Devin Mahina, Kurt Henderson, and Taryn Houck combined for 155 catches for 2,057 yards. Okay.
So why does he transfer in? Why, if you're already putting up those numbers, why don't you stay
Because you graduated, and then isn't there a special relationship between him and the wide receiver coach, Guy Holliday?
Yes. Okay. And I would also throw in there that, you know, the BYU term we like to use is exposure. I think that that has – that you're putting up 200-yard games at UTEP, but no one's seeing it. Like, sure, right. Scouts will find you, but I think that a big part of it is that – BYU's on ESPN. If you put you're putting up. If you do multiple 200-yard games at BYU on ESPN, yeah, it's not like BYU's Alabama, it's still going to have a lot more national buzz for him.
He might get one game.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, but anyway,
but he's had you said multiple in the past. That's why I threw out.
Over the 3 years, he's had two games.
Okay.
So, but here's the thing. Okay, he's only 30 catches, 42 yards, and 4 touchdowns behind all the returning receivers for BYU.
Yeah, it's wild.
Like, I mean, his three man seasons, you know how you do your Eagle Project and you got to figure out man hours? His three man seasons are about the same as like, the 11 man seasons of the returning receivers. Okay, anyway. So, Jordan Leslie, without question, uncategorically... And we've said this for a long time. A lot of people are focusing on Devin Blackman and Nick Kurtz. You and I were on Team Jordan Leslie.
For sure.
He's going to be the best one.
I totally agree this year that he'll be the best one. I think that out of those two, and I don't know which one, but I bet one of them just flames out and is a flop.
He's a Ross Apo.
That's not an indictment on either of those guys, but that how many times have I been tricked by a JC transfer that's talked up as like...
Yeah. Tico Pringle is my go-to example.
Every school has guys that they point to that they were so hyped up on as a JC transfer, and then they did nothing.
Right.
And so I hope I'm wrong, but my prediction is that one of those guys, Nick Kurtz or Blackman, that we're so excited about, like we look at back at the end of the season and we think, that guy hardly did anything.
All right, so... Now, you know, Blackman's super fast, Nick Kurtz super fast and tall, right? They look the part.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's talking about Keanu Nelson.
And I would say that's probably because he hasn't ever done anything.
Okay, but here's the thing. You know I'm a Stanford guy.
Okay? Yes.
Nelson, 1 catch, 4 yards in his career, okay? He's been buried behind amazing wide receiving talent.
Okay. Okay.
Any of these four guys that he was buried behind, Ty Montgomery, Devin Kajust, Cody Whitfield, Michael Rector, all these guys would be the number one receiver at BYU. Like, no doubt. Okay. And the thing is he was buried behind those guys. Like, it's hard to see the field and they play that slow style. So receivers can stay on every play. It's not like BYU where it's like, you know, one every first down, like, you know, within every four plays you're going to get on the field. Like, you know, they stay with kind of the same dudes the whole way.
To me, I would say he's got to be great in practice, though, to get any time, because he's only got 1 year left and he hasn't done anything yet. And so to me, he's got to be noticeably better than Colby Pearson. He's got to be noticeably better than Kurt Henderson, or else why play?
He's a
the
different
senior.
Because he's a different guy. The reason is this is why I would look at him, is he's short. He's the JD.
He's the short shifty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's your slot guy. We don't have a slot guy at this point, right?
It's all projection on, I mean, people say Blackman, people say, well, and you hear Dye's name thrown out.
Right.
And
Trey Dye.
But that's just because of his dad. Like, his highlight film in high school is dang good. So it's not just because of his dad, but people are already planning on him. When these crazy fans are saying we have the best receiving core in the nation, they include his name in it as a true freshman.
So that's the thing is they're including his name. And the crazy bit is we would go from one of the worst receiving cores in the nation to suddenly one of the best. It's in the middle. I think they've improved it, right? Or at least that's the hope.
Yeah.
Because basically it's a push. Like, you lose Cody Hoffman, you bring in Jordan Leslie. That's a push, right? So the question is that number two receiver, basically, is can we find a number two receiver better than J.D. Falslev? Who, by the way, if you remember last year, didn't play in the offense hardly at all.
Yeah, was underused, in my opinion.
Probably underused, but really the thing that stands out when you think about J.D. Falslev last year is fumbled punt returns. So the thing is...
And the one game where he was returning them, like, against Mid-Tennessee State, he was returning them like crazy, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, but other than, but who cares about Mid-Tennessee State?
All right, so, but here's the thing. So they're trying to improve the targets for Taysom Hill, right? I mean, and I think that this, it basically, and the reason that you and I are interested in these receivers is this is the one element. If they can start passing, this team is dangerous.
It's an offensive just juggernaut, a nightmare for opposing teams D if they can have a legitimate deep threat, consistent passing attack.
Because if you have to widen and deepen against the run, against with Jamal and Taysom and, you know, even Lasique is a good runner, Algie.
Yeah.
All these guys, they're pretty good. So it'll be really interesting.
If last year against the good teams, they would stack the box and just dare us to pass.
Right.
But that their corners were better than our receivers. And so if this year, if our receivers can beat one-on-one coverage consistently, then it's going to just open up everything. Like that's the why I'm just smile just thinking about that first game. If we can prove a passing attack, my worry though with the passing is that with our schedule and with what has been proven to Taysom his whole life, I'm just worried that he's just going to be able to run over teams and not even have to pass that much.
Oh,
look at our schedule. I think
that's getting very cocky, Tosh. That's very cocky.
Yeah, I think it's real though. I think he runs all over UConn. Not necessarily has to go with what he feels like is
fine. But the thing is you know, Taysom. Let's just say it. Okay, I know he got better throughout the year last year. There's no question he got better at passing throughout the year. His accuracy went up. He still didn't, you know, his yards per attempt weren't really good, right? They struggled in the red zone because he can't throw. They just stacked the box, and Taysom, his solution is to do everything. Taysom knows that his arm is just as trustworthy as the West Valley City Police Department. I'm just telling you, like, or at the very least, right, he has more faith in his legs than his arm.
Yeah, no, I'll totally agree with that. He has more faith, and especially when he gets under pressure, his whole life what's bailed him out is his legs.
Right.
That he's the fastest guy in the field in almost every game. And so...
Hey, one other thing about Keanu Nelson, the last Stanford transfer, he worked out okay.
Who was?
Taysom.
All right, there we go, yeah.
Anyway, but... okay, but here's the thing, Tosh. Like, 25% of all quarterbacks who take the field for college football teams throw for over 3,000 yards. Okay? That's just more recently in the last 2-3 years.
Okay.
Passing's easier than ever in college, right?
And totally agree. The rules, I mean, with targeting.
Right, well, and then more exotic formations and receiver option routes and,
yeah,
you know, it's not just receivers running. It's not like Madden where you have receivers running the route no matter what, like the defense tells them. These guys are, they're reading the defense just as much as the wide receiver, right? And so it's really become it's easier to pass nowadays than ever. And yet, at the same time, this is the worst 4-year stretch of passing for BYU since 1975, and that's as far back as the game logs go for BYU.
So that's, I mean, I didn't realize it was that bad. So in as long as the stats go, we're currently in the worst 4 years of BYU passing ever.
Since 75.
Holy smokes.
We haven't,
it doesn't surprise me. But.
We haven't had a 3,000-yard passer in 4 years. Okay? That's the... if it happens again, it's the longest stretch since Gifford Nielsen became the first guy to do it at BYU, okay, in 76. That's crazy. Okay, another thing. Let's talk about this, though. This is a stat that I think you'll find interesting, right? Since 75, BYU has had 6 seasons where they managed to throw for 300 yards in a game only twice within a season or less, okay? So, to make sure you understand that, game by game, if you go game by game where the team was able to pass for over 300 yards, they did it only twice within a season in 1975, 78, 2003, and then you ready? 2010, 2011, and 2013.
Jeesh.
Okay, so
here, not to be, I mean, this is kind of a Debbie Downer here, but so I was about to say, well, for sure Taysom's going to throw for 3,000 yards this year. But when if I had to put money on that, I would actually be hesitant. Not that he is that will he stay healthy?
I think that's a huge – I predicted last year that it was absolutely going to happen, and of course it didn't, right? But like, ooh, oh boy.
Yeah, like, if he doesn't start throwing the ball a lot more, and if our O-line
isn't improved,
isn't just greatly improved, then I think he's going to have a hard time not getting banged up. And you need that's what you need. I think that way more than 25% of college quarterbacks in the current era would throw for over 3,000 yards if uninjured. Yeah. But like that's the big question mark on this team this year to me is
everything is
can he stay healthy?
It feels like everything is derailed if he gets hurt.
Our team's totally different. Christian Stewart, I like the guy from what I've seen, but our offense is completely different right. with Christian Stewart in the game, who's, even though I'm a big fan, I admit is a huge unknown.
All right, but let me – so moving back to the two games with 300 yards over.
Okay.
That means Taysom Hill last year, he only reached 300 yards twice against Houston and Boise State. That sort of production in the offense matches the output of the immortal Matt John, Todd Jackson, Barry Beck, Mortensen Brown. Okay.
Jeesh.
And the unforgettable Jake Riley, Heaps Nelson. Okay. So the thing is in each of the six seasons that I listed above, I got looking into it. There was either a quarterback change or an injury issue, right? Except for last year, except for Taysom. So the thing is that's interesting is it's a good thing for Taysom that he can run, or else history indicates that his passing performance that would have got him benched. Like it is what it is, man. He wasn't good enough at passing last year.
What I would say in a little bit in his defense is that, and this is just my eyeball as a 29-year-old man, I cannot remember us having a worse O-line than I felt like we did last year.
And we just chronicled how bad the receivers were.
Yeah, and exactly. And so I was actually watching a J.D. Fosselvin interview the other day. It was from the season, but that's what he was. It was an interview I'd never seen before, but he was really going to the defense of Taysom. He's saying, hey, I've seen this guy in practice. Like, he can throw the ball. The reason why his numbers are not what people expected is that the O-line's not doing their job, and us as receivers are not getting open, and we're dropping way too many balls. Mm-hmm. And so to say, he just echoed what you said, that he put up those numbers with bad receivers and a bad O-line. And so this year, from all talks, our O-line will be improved. It's a lot healthier.
Hard to believe it couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. Hard to believe it couldn't is the understatement of the show, that our O-line will be better. And so, yeah, it'll be fun to watch. We got to throw the ball this year. We're not going to be able to beat Texas again just by running it and running it and running it.
Folks, we're not going to run for 550 yards again against Texas. So, okay, one other thing, right? In the 17 seasons, BYU's been ranked in the AP Top 25 at the end. 14 of those 17 ranked seasons, BYU passed for over 4,000 yards. And then the average, they passed over 3,000 in all of them. And the average passing yards for a ranked team at BYU is 3,659 yards. So it's like, Listen, I think it's easier to be a tough team to play against if you can pass well rather than run well. Like, would you rather play Texas Tech or Navy? Right? Like, you'd rather play Navy. It's easier to defend the run. So anyway, that's the thing that I wanted to kind of hit on is that, yes, passing is going to be a huge key. And if they can pass, man, It's very exciting. It makes you giddy about what these guys might be able to do, right?
So, totally. Hey, back to the thing that, just in our defense, we couldn't remember who the 2009 receivers were after Pitta.
Sure.
There was a huge, I mean, I don't feel bad when I looked at it. I mean, Luke Ashworth, solid guy, but he was up there.
Tim Hughes high.
O'Neal Chambers was actually our best guy at the receiver position that year, who had marginal stats.
The thing, what comes to mind for you when you think of O'Neal Chambers?
Just potential in the world, all the potential in the world, but just couldn't stay on the field. And he would fumble in big moments, too.
He was a fumbler. I think about how they always put him back for kickoff, but rather than do like the cradle catch, he'd reach above his head and catch.
The only person I've ever seen do that.
That's kind of amazing.
I liked how he ran though. He ran like a tough guy. Like he would just anyway. Like he would. He wasn't afraid of contact.
Yep.
Okay, so here's in 2000. We're talking way too much 2009 receiving here, but Manasseh Tonga was our fourth leading receiver.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Shows those seasons, but that actually gives me some insight on why I think Jamal on a screen or Jamal on a swing pass really makes some sense. You know, I don't know if he can catch or not, right? I mean, we've seen him catch a little bit. Seems like he can catch.
Yeah.
Adam Hine, I would love to see Adam Hine get some of that. And even, you know, I mean, Manasseh Tonga, he was huge, right? So, like, can Lasike catch? Because if he can catch... Like, let's just do a quick swing to him and let him pile drive some outside linebackers or you know, get to that safety and destroy him. Like, I just – do you want to step up and hit – I mean, we've all seen the rugby video of
–
it's like, do you want to step up and try to do something to Paul Asike? I don't, right? And so – and now he's got pads on. Oh, my gosh. Like, so it's like I just think that, you know, those little quick passes to the out that Anai used to employ in the air raid – you know, he used to use his receivers quite a lot in the pass game.
Yeah. You mean his running backs?
I mean his running backs.
He used to use his receivers more than he did last year, too, though. So, changing topics
last year he only used receivers.
Yeah, but even not well. He didn't use them well.
Right, but there's no tight ends. There was no, I mean, yeah. I just, it's one of those things. It's the receiving... It's the underrated thing that nobody's talking about. The reason that we got four transfers at receiver is because we're terrible at receiver. We're awful.
Yeah, we were last year. So I actually expect a lot better things. So changing to kind of the topic of I was going to say the day, but more the topic of yesterday, Harvey Longhi.
Yeah.
What are your I think I have some different views than I've been hearing other people.
I'd love
talk
to hear
about.
Them. My main thing is let's go over the Harvey Longhi thing. He's a Utah running back.
Yep.
Goes on his mission. Mission changes him.
Yep.
He makes a decision that he would like to go to BYU because the culture there is going to be what's best for him.
Yeah.
Okay? So he then tells Vaisakahema. And Vaisakahema, or Vaisakahema finds out. And
yeah.
He writes an article about it saying that Harvey Longhi would like to transfer to the Y. Okay, so great, nice player, had troubles in the past, right? Got in some trouble in the past
in high school. Yeah,
went to the U. Now he served a mission. He's come back. Wants to come to BYU. Some of the details. He never signed a letter of intent with the Utes.
Yeah, well, because without getting too like nerdy here, but I'll just try to simplify it. If someone's an early enrollee, it's a way to hide. Well, you can use them as the year before scholarships or that year.
Uh-huh.
And you're only allowed to offer 28 scholarships. Well, you're only allowed to sign 28 guys a year, but only 25 can be on scholarship after that year. So teams oversign knowing that guys won't pan out. Anyway, the long and short of it, they had him in an early enrollee and not sign a letter of intent as a way to kind of get around those – is a way to play that system a little bit.
Because
then you can choose which year he counts for. Anyway, it bit him in the butt. It turns out that that's not something you should do if
you really want the player.
If you really want the player.
So what ends up happening is it comes back to Kyle Whittingham, and Kyle Whittingham's like, basically, right, I'm not going to let him transfer, right? As far as I'm concerned, he's a Utah player, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Big player. Tough, right? And certainly adds depth to the running back core at BYU, okay? not only that, if you read the thing, basically just he wants to come, and there's they're not happy about it. The Inuitland, they're not very happy about this guy wanting
and,
to come.
And where the thing that bothers me is that in Inuitland, the talk right now is, oh, he wasn't that good anyway.
Right.
He's not a Pac-12 running back anyway.
Right.
The thing that makes me just kind of laugh at that is that it's not how many like Army All-American,
right.
Four-star right. recruit. Do they just have so many of those now that they can just let him leave and they don't care? No, he was the only one they have. He's the only one on their whole team that played in the high school Army All-American
right.
game. And he averaged 5.4 yards a carry.
Wow.
As a true freshman
right.
for Utah.
Was he doing it in cleanup time?
You could argue, not somewhat, one of his better games was BYU in the 54-10
right,
game.
Right, I remember that.
He didn't have a ton of carries.
By the way, the 54-10 game, this is the last time BYU had a lead against the Utes.
Yeah,
was in that
don't tell me that.
Anyway,
yeah.
Okay.
And so, anyway, he's a true freshman. Like, how could you judge if he's going to be a great college running back? Off of, he had good stats, but they weren't as like impressive as they expected. But as a true freshman, it's still, anyway, I think that there still is a lot of potential with him at running back.
So can Kyle Whittingham, this is the thing, can Kyle Whittingham block him from coming
no,
to BYU?
No, I think it's already a done deal.
Right.
And so he's here, from what I hear. Like, the plan was that he was going to start classes today.
Ooh, he's got to catch up.
Yeah, he's starting a little
behind.
Yeah, but it's doable. And so anyway, he's actually, don't let the Utah fans sway you in that, he doesn't matter anyway. He could be, this is one of the recruits that I've been most excited about in a long, long time.
Yeah, he's a very good player. I said at the Matt Carlino transfer, that's what's best for the player is best for the team, right?
Yeah.
So I don't understand why you don't embrace somebody. If they want to transfer and leave your team, you let them go. Like, you know what I mean? And I just think that what's best for the player is best for the team. If somebody doesn't want to be around, like, you don't want them around. You
yeah.
know what I mean? And so that's the thing. The thing that's crazy is the trouble that they're giving, you know, Harvey Longhi, the Ute fans. It's just nuts to me. You know, there's been several guys that have transferred to the University of Utah.
Yeah.
And it's not a problem when somebody transfers to them.
No, I mean,
they love Jake Murphy.
Exactly.
Like, so what's wrong with these people?
I think that a lot of it is that a lot of it comes down to when they went to the Pac-12, I think that in their minds they thought that no one in would ever transfer
okay.
from Utah to BYU again.
All right, they thought that they were the sexy girl, right?
Yeah.
Homecoming queen. We've had two undefeated seasons in 4 years. We're in the Pac-12 now. We are sexy.
I will have my pick of men for the rest of my life.
I will have my pick of men for the rest of my life, right? Then you go to college, you get your freshman 15.
Yeah.
Things start happening. There's a lot of other pretty people around.
And they're looking in the mirror, and they're thinking, we are not even good looking anymore. You know, like, what has happened?
And so any little thing is just a huge rejection.
Yeah.
And this is coming from the guys that are fans of the school that has lost to them 4 times in a row. The bottom line, though, is that I just think that they have got to, like, pull yourselves together, Utah. Pull yourselves together. Stop making your identity that you're not BYU. How about that one, too?
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I actually, I can't play it both ways. I think that they should be really upset that they lost Harvey Longhi. What really has bothered me
sure.
is that they act really upset, but then they also say, oh, but, you know, it doesn't matter. He wasn't going to play for us ever anyway.
And
he's not any good.
Somebody might counter that. I saw a lot of that coming from BYU fans when Jake Heaps left.
Yeah, that's true.
But. Jake Heaps did suck.
Yeah.
Like, we watched him play it out for us.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't good.
And sadly,
In the same game that Harvey Longhi looked great, Jake Heaps looked awful. He looked terrible. So
and he's at Miami now, but he hasn't proven us wrong. So I really hope Harvey. It will even be more sweet if Harvey just turns out to be this baller for BYU.
Oh well,
it'll just really add.
He'll be the starting running back when we play at Rice-Eccles Stadium in however long.
2016.
So I don't know what to. I mean, listen. I just think that it's not. I think it's crazy that the amount of hubbub and my thing is too is like if I was a kid and I was looking at coming to Utah and I saw the way Kyle Whittingham reacted to the idea of somebody wanting to change their mind and transfer.
Yeah.
I would think twice about signing up with that dude.
And here's the thing that I think's the greatest part, as great of a player as I think Harvey Lange is going to be, what I'm even more excited about is that it seems like there's a shift in the tide of the Polynesian players back to BYU. And I think Kyle Whittingham acting the way he has is just helping that cause. That if they're, and I respect this about the Polynesian community, but they stick up for their own.
Right.
About all else. Like, that's like number one allegiance. And Vi is a good example of that. If he's made a lot of BYU fans mad and then now Utah fans, because his number one is his Polynesian community.
He wants to see the Polys do good, yeah.
And the fact that this has gone down the way that it has, I think helps us. I love that it seems like we got Vi back on our side as BYU. It seems like with...
I don't think he ever left our side, by the way.
Well, he was mad that we didn't hire Mark, the running backs coach.
Atuaya?
Yeah. He was mad that we didn't hire him before. And now that we got him back, and now we have, with Guy Holiday, who's half Polynesian, I think we have four Polynesian guys on our offensive staff now, where we had zero, and he was mad about that. But we've got four now, and so, which is great for BYU. I think the future of BYU is brighter today than I thought it was a few days ago. And a lot of that is I really think the Polynesian tide and that some of the best LDS athletes in Utah, it seems like they're coming back to BYU and that there's kind of been a shift that BYU's looked at now as the school they should go to more than it was.
Tosh, this is the sort of that joy that you're feeling inside you, that hope that you're feeling inside. This is the sort of thing that happens when... You don't force kids to recruit to commit when they're 14 years old.
There's truth there, too.
When you force kids to commit when they're 14, you get 4 years of the receivers we just had.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, my whole thing is like, they've changed their philosophy. We're going to battle for guys. We might lose some guys at the end. We're going to win some guys at the end. Like, back in the day, like, Uriah Leotawa, who came in as a linebacker, it was between Stanford and us. And we battled. But he was verbally committed to Stanford for like 2 years. And then on letter of intent day, flipped. Came to BYU. Okay? Why? Because we continued to try to get that guy.
Yeah.
In the past, understanding is,
yeah,
we would have said, oh, well, he knows what we are. If he wants to be a BYU Cougar.
In the last 10 years, yeah.
Yeah. If he knows what we are. Then he'll come, right? But that's ridiculous.
Right? Totally ridiculous. And where I think it's shown up the most is O-line. That I think out of all players to project who's going to be good like 4 years before they play on campus, it's O-line. Because then you're offering guys that
Even 16.
Yeah.
You try to pull in a 16-year-old and...
How do you know? Like, because so much of line, he could just be the only one who has hair in his armpits at that age. And you think, oh, this guy's going to be a stud.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, you get this guy and everyone has hair in their armpits and he's not that good anymore.
Right.
But you've offered. And I think that is what's happened to us a little bit on the O-line is we were offering guys way too early and it bit us in the butt.
Well, it'd be like this. Like, you know, when you get into BYU, like we both went,
yeah,
right? Like, listen, I came from a little town in Oregon, and I was the student body president, and I had good grades, and I, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah. Keep talking yourself up some more. Let's hear some. What else?
Let me tell you about my glory days. Let me tell you about my glory days, okay? And I was involved with this and that. Okay, so, but here's the thing. I came to BYU, and I looked around and went, I'm an average dude here.
Yeah.
I when I came here, I was like, wow, like, I'm actually dumber than a lot of these people.
Yeah,
like,
no, I think everyone that goes to BYU has that experience. Like, they can relate to what you're saying.
I'm going to get my butt kicked here because these people are smarter than me, more driven than me. I don't care about my grade as much as some of these people. So I'm, you know, and it's unbelievable. And, by the way, I don't have to I used to not do homework at home because I could finish it all at school, right? Yeah. And then now you're at BYU, you got to do homework. Okay, so where I'm going with that is, imagine if we tried to academically project out and say, eighth grader, you're admitted to BYU.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And we didn't let people play it out, and we didn't see how they did the rest of their high school career. We just went and found a freshman or an eighth grader and said, would you like to come and play, right?
Totally.
Or do you want to study at BYU?
Because we were offering on average sophomores. And to what I think one of the biggest changes has been, and another reason I'm stoked on our future, is Jeff Martson.
Yeah.
That guy is getting it done. Like,
well, it's good. It's a couple things. Not LDS, right? Experience at Alabama, right?
Yeah.
And bringing dudes in Alabama and seeing what they do well. And then his entire thing, he's not splitting duties as a coach and recruiting. His only thing is recruiting, right? And so one of the things that I think helps with that is that he can see how to pitch this thing to people who aren't necessarily LDS, right?
Yeah.
And also he can say, like, well, listen, like, this place is a great place. I'm there. And it's fine. It's totally fine. Like, and you can be not LDS and go to BYU. It's wonderful.
And more than that, and I think you hit on a great point, is that he assessed what BYU is, and I think has sold our strengths better than has ever been done in the past. And I think that's one big reason why we've become Transfer U. One is because we had position needs, and we went after those. A big one is that more than ever in our past. So here's the transformation in my eyes of how we've approached the honor code. During the Croton years, it was, let's try to minimize this honor code.
Right.
And then Bronco totally had a shift on that because of what happened there.
It was
Bronco,
the only thing that
it was
mattered.
The only thing that mattered. And you already had to have been living it for like a while.
Right.
Like, and it was like, hey, this is what it is. And that mattered more than even I would say football.
Right.
That they had to be the right type of guy already.
Well, I mean, they were punishing people before they were even students,
yeah,
for honor code violations and saying you're going to have to sit out for a year before they're even for things they were doing before they were students.
Yeah. Like, and so where now, where that's transformed, where I'm most comfortable where this is as a university is they're pitching this as, hey, this is the honor code. This is how it's going to help you. That they're getting a lot of non-LDS kids but they know about the honor code. And what I love is that they're in their interviews, they're saying, I went to BYU because it's going to make me a better man.
Sure.
And that it's going to prepare me and keep me out of trouble. So I think it's going to help me make the NFL. That I loved Blackman. That's what he was saying. That
Evan Blackman. Yeah.
He's like, hey, he went to Oregon.
Right.
And it wasn't a football thing. It was that it wasn't an atmosphere to keep him on the path that's going to keep him to make the NFL,
right,
where BYU is.
Right.
I love that we've got a non-LDS guy as our recruiting coordinator that is pitching that better than I think has ever been done. And that's what we should be as a university, in my mind,
right,
is a place where people go to be better, to help them achieve great things.
And I of course, you need to be that. If you're going to convince anybody to come to your school, you've got to convince them that they're going to become better there, right? And most people only talk about that in terms of football. Perhaps we can talk about that in terms of lifestyle, not just to those who are Mormon.
Yeah. Right?
You might just bring in a kid and say, oh, there's a lot of Mormon girls here. You're going to get married in the temple because you came to BYU, son, right? Now it's just like, hey, listen, you come here. It's like, people are nice. There isn't a whole lot of trouble to get into. The guys that you're going to meet on the team all live this straight edge style, right?
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is you're going to come in, you're going to make great friends. These guys are really nice. Look, here, come hang out with Taysom Hill. See what kind of a good
He's a good dude. He's normal. Like, you know what I mean? You're going to be fine. The Mormons aren't that crazy, man.
The odds of you getting arrested are way less here.
I know. The police look the other way.
Not because of that.
Oh.
But you're not going to be – physically, you're not going to be putting – the temptations to put drugs into your body are going to be way less than any other school. You're not even going to be really tempted to put alcohol on your body.
You can find it if you want. It's out there, but at the end of the day, like, this is something that may help you. Okay, so this is one of the things I wanted to talk about with you, and we'll save it for next time.
Okay, little teaser.
But I've been wanting to talk to you about this since we started this show. Tosh, next show, we're going to talk about how serving missions hurts our athletic programs.
All right, and I disagree, so I think we're going to have a nice debate next show.
I'm excited for it. If you want to weigh in on any of that, next time we're talking about missions and how they affect the BYU athletes, and if you want to argue pro or con, please go ahead and send in your emails, cougarcast@gmail.com. Cougarcast@gmail.com. Also, Twitter @CougarCast. And again, look out for my posts coming up on Vanquish the Foe. Tosh, stay away from those West Valley City police.
Will do.
All right.
Have a good one.